work toward a planet transformed by our care. The final words from our opening hymn today really sum up for me the meaning in today's service on the theme of the prophetic imperative. I have found the term prophetic imperative troublesome at times, but the work on this service has given me an understanding and appreciation of the concept. Now, last week, Reverend Deborah Falk gave us a powerful look at the personal impact of the prophetic imperative, asking us to see love as a verb calling us to action. Now, I think this is an important time for us at Lakehead Unitarian Fellowship as we ponder our future. Now, the term prophetic imperative in our Unitarian Universalist tradition goes back to a 1977 dissertation by Reverend Richard Gilbert, which eventually became the book, The Prophetic Imperative, Social Gospel in Theory and Practice. That was in 1992, and the second edition, published in 2000, has been the source for much of this service. Given the range of social, political, economic, health, racial, and environmental challenges that exist today, the prophetic imperative continues to have significant importance. Now, prophetic refers to the tradition of the prophets in the Hebrew scriptures, figures like Isaiah, Ezekiel, Jeremiah, Amos, and Micah. According to Eric Fromm, the prophets believed that the meaning of life is the struggle for justice in community. Gilbert notes that the word prophet originally applied to individuals, but his intent has been to apply it to congregations. This begins with a congregation understanding itself as a community of moral discourse. And Gilbert then took the word imperative from the book by John Bennett called The Radical Imperative, noting that for him, that the word for him involved a sense of urgency to live out the ethical implications of religious faith. Now, Reverend Meg Riley suggests that prophetic UU congregations share three central characteristics. First, they draw from the deepest parts of Unitarian and Universalist theology, committing themselves to the wisdom of those theologies. Our work is to co-create the holy in this world is most effective when it builds on perspectives gained by the hard experience of those who came before us. Prophetic congregations draw strength for today through connecting to the essential insights of our ancestors. And second, prophetic congregations embody radical caring, radical in the sense of the very roots of the place, its central mission. You sometimes hear caring, the pastoral aspect of congregations, described as the opposite of prophetic. But this dualism is false and destructive. Radical caring is both prophetic and pastoral. And third, while drawing on our past and on caring in the present, prophetic congregations orient themselves squarely toward the future. Prophetic eyes see through a lens of hope, not hope from naivete or from casting our gaze away from oppression and suffering, but hope as a spiritually disciplined response, a commitment to action. The prophetic imperative is the call to justice work, the call to the repair of the world. And as the Hebrew prophet Micah said, we are called to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with God. Clearly, the repair of the world is a prophetic imperative. And 2 weeks ago, Reverend Michelle Singh asked us, what does it mean to repair the world? I have to say, though, really, that I don't think we can repair the world. However, what we can do is act in ways that will help the world to repair itself. Reverend Richard Gilbert's purpose was to encourage Unitarian Universalists to construct a new social gospel in which social responsibility is intrinsically linked to the religious quest and the work of a congregation. Now, the original social gospel was a religious movement in North America that began in the late 19th century and continued up till about the 1930s. It focused on social reform to address urban problems, especially those associated with working conditions, but it also included calls for suffrage and for temperance. And Reverend Philip Hewitt, in his book, Unitarians in Canada, expressed it as follows. The social gospel affected all denominations with its call for redemption through the transformation of social, political, and economic life and the establishment of the kingdom of heaven upon earth. Now, Gilbert looked for a revised and more realistic social gospel. He wrote in 2000, "My hope is that the Unitarian Universalist congregations enter the new millennium inspired by a new social gospel, calling on the virtues of that turn of the century movement, but learning from its mistakes. The old social gospel had an exaggerated optimism with regard to human nature and a somewhat naive sentimentalism for social change. In sum, it could not survive reality. In promoting a new social gospel, Gilbert said, I contend that the Unitarian Universalist movement lives under a prophetic imperative, a religious mandate for the corporate address of the church to the systemic problems of society. And he says, I cannot prove that. I do not assert it as a divine imperative. I only feel it deep in my bones. Now, this perspective was enhanced through the adoption of the UU Principles and Sources in 1985. And the second source, as we heard last week from Reverend Deborah Falk, draws from the words and deeds of prophetic women and men which challenge us to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and the transforming power of love. And here in Canada, we've gone further with the adoption of an eighth principle, calling us to affirm and promote individual and communal action that accountably dismantles racism and systemic barriers to full inclusion in ourselves and our institutions. Liberal religion in its Unitarian Universalist form is a covenantal, prophetic community of free and disciplined men and women working toward the beloved community of love and justice. And Gilbert, a humanist, calls it a covenant of unenforceable obligations. And as he put it, reverence for life, I believe, provides the ethical basis for social action. So I want to look for a time at the prophetic imperative in relationship to Lakehead Unitarian Fellowship. Richard Gilbert asks how a local congregation might mobilize itself as a prophetic community. And he suggests 8 models for social action in the local congregation. and I'm afraid I'm going to subject you to a list. It must be noted that these models are interdependent and complement each other. So what is the relationship of these social responsibility models to the activities of LUF through our history? The first model, he suggests, is the church as a community of moral discourse. This model involves the whole congregation in moral discourse, exploring the church's moral tradition, fundamental principles of ethics, and their application to particular situations. I would suggest that our program of Sunday services, small group ministries, and specialized workshops have work to address this. Things such as the welcoming congregation, truth, healing, and reconciliation workshops, nonviolent communication. Number two, the church as staging platform and launching pad. And this model would have the church prepare and train people for social action. Now, I couldn't think of anything in a specific way, but certainly everything in number one leads people to the position of being able to move to social action. Number three, the church is interfaith innovator and/or participant. In this model, the church can adopt the role of a social pioneer, interfaith innovator, and can be a participant in interfaith projects. And for a few examples, we can think of the work of establishing the Memorial Society many years ago, which helped overthrow the monopoly of funeral homes. Dying with Dignity. Certainly Empty Bowls and Caring Hearts has been a major interfaith and community-wide project. Shelter House, Grandmothers for Africa, Bicycles for Humanity, Unitarian Service Canada. Just a few examples. Number four, the church is a specialized ministry. In this model, the local congregation can form coalitions with other like-minded congregations and groups to sponsor specialized ministries. Now, I wasn't able to think of anything where we've done that. However, our involvement with the lay chaplaincy program has certainly been a specialized ministry, even though it's been largely within the UU context. And number five and number six, I'm linked together. Number five, the church is a creative minority. The church can play a number of roles in influencing the influential. Or number six, the liberal church as pathfinder. This model would have members of the liberal church be moral and philosophical troubleshooters. Now certainly members and friends of this congregation have been people active in the community, musicians, artists, politicians, university professors, physical and mental health workers, community activists, and I'm going to name a very few just to give a sample. Dusty Miller, Bruce Heyer, Patty Haidu, Janet DeMille, Aaron Beagle. Number seven, Ecclesiola in Ecclesia, small group within a large group. This model is that of a small committed group of church people working both inside and outside the church to affect social change. I can think specifically of the Canadian Unitarians for Social Justice, Diversity Thunder Bay, and I'm sure people have other ideas as well. And number eight, the church as a corporate actor. The church should function in the community as an institution. And one of the things that I think of with this is the Ken Morrison lectures, big ideas and hard questions of our time, where we try to engage the community. The adoption of the eighth principle, our global and local charities, the promotion of CUC position statements. Now, I'm sure many of you can think of many other relevant activities from our history. I believe that we have, throughout our history, embodied many of the eight models that have been proposed by Gilbert. Now, LUF was one of the earliest CUC congregations to become a welcoming congregation. And since we are in the midst of Pride Month, I want to offer a particular perspective on this aspect of the prophetic imperative. And it's from Reverend Chris Rothmeyer, and although it doesn't really apply to us as a congregation, but I think of it in some different incarnation, it could well have been me. Reverend Chris Rothmeyer. The first time I was told that I was too queer to be a congregation's minister, they asked, "What will the neighbors think?" as if it were the most natural question in the world. It was then that I understood how grace works. It's costly. It requires us to be uncomfortable, to get outside ourselves, to go all in. I decided that I didn't want a wishy-washy faith, one that uses me to signal virtue. We're so enlightened, we supported same-sex marriage. As if it's a contest to see who can hold the most correct positions, and not my life that they're talking about. I don't want a faith that cares more about what conservative neighbors think, more than caring about affirming my humanity, who understand that throwing your lot in with marginalized people requires more than talking about your friendship with a lesbian couple down the street. I want a faith that doesn't consider me as a queer minister, but rather does its damnedest to live up to our professed values. I want a faith that centers my voice and others like me when necessary, that doesn't think that decades of marginalization can be erased with a few good deeds. I don't want a faith that claims to be universalist, but constantly judges some of us for the sin of not conforming to ideas of who we should be. Instead, I want to build this faith. I'll do it with my own two hands if I have to. If I pick up some friends along the way, we just might be able to build something spectacular together. So as we examine our history and activity over the past 63 years, I think we have followed, however imperfectly, the prophetic imperative, whether we knew it or not. And I've tried to suggest some of the ways that we at LUF have embodied Gilbert's models for social responsibility. Our current mission statement from 2017 reflects that. Together in liberal religious community, we grow in spirit, nurture inclusive relationships, and act for a just and sustainable world. Also in 2017, we adopted a strategic plan that had four pillars. Sunday services, to create Sunday services that challenge, inspire, recharge, energize, and connect us. Other programs, to offer programs which enliven us, strengthen our community, and can be managed with available people. Outside the walls, to use our energies and physical resources to achieve our mission in Thunder Bay and beyond. And four, accessible building, to develop a strategy to move LUF into an accessible space. And as we know, in March 2020, the world changed. The other programs and outside the walls pillars were dramatically impacted by the COVID pandemic. I think we have done well with Sunday services moving initially to Zoom and later to hybrid or multi-platform services. We have moved to accessible space, space that is intended to be transitional, and that will, of course, depend on the wishes of all of us in the congregation. We now have an accessible meeting space, a new board to serve and lead the community, and I believe we're at a point where we must face the challenge and the opportunity of re-envisioning our future. Gilbert's models for social action are designed to stimulate dialogue on the ways in which LUF might organize to act on society. And it's crucial that this dialogue be a vital part of the total program of the congregation, and with heavy congregational involvement. This corporate element is essential if effective action is to emerge. We must see ourselves as an agency for social change, not simply a place where individual social involvement is tolerated or simply encouraged. If social action in the church is left to a marginal few, the social strength of the church is greatly diminished. The greater the involvement of the total congregation in planning and implementing various modes of social action, the greater its impact will be. So, it's time now for us to revisit our strategic plan as we look to move forward. And in the words from the Talmud, "Do not be daunted by the enormity of the world's grief. Do justly now, love mercy now, walk humbly now. You are not obligated to complete the work, but neither are you free to abandon it." We must develop and implement a process of discernment to refocus and refine who and what we are, and how we want to be as a beloved community, seeking love and justice under the prophetic imperative. May it be so, and may we help make it so.